Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the wrestling podcast that understands sometimes the bigger fights happen outside the ring rather than in them. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the master of the media scrum, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you doing?
Andrew, I'm old, I'm tired, and I work with metaphorical children.
Yeah, man. None of us work with literal children. I think it would be funny now to see someone who works at a daycare like roll out that exact same speech and be like, "I'm working with children."
There was a brief moment where that sound was a trend on TikTok that people like to post, you know, just for whatever it is that they do, working at Starbucks or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And amazing topical references to start our episode.
Yes. How are you, my man?
I've been better. I've had a rough summer, maybe not as rough as AEW, but
fair.
We will get into that. I feel like this is almost a month since you guys have heard us, and we're sorry about that. But this has been a time where, like, Tyler and I both were just kind of talking about this, that like watching wrestling was not very fun the past month. Was at certain points depressing.
Accompanied with a lot of life events going on.
I think
we've attended 4 to 5 weddings between us.
Yeah, and still got more to go. So we've had a lot going on, and the wrestling did not make it easy to want to get up and talk about it. But we are putting back on our big boy pants, and we're getting back in the booth. You know, you realize we're only 10 episodes away from hitting 100 episodes.
Oh my, are
so,
we?
Yeah, so like okay. we gotta refocus ourselves to get to that triple digit number here.
The road to 100.
Yeah, the road to 100 starts now. multiple pay-per-view stops along the way before we get there. So most of this episode, I think, is it fair to say, Tyler, we're going to talk about the kind of the bad, very bad, no good summer AEW has had.
The elephant in the room, yeah.
Yeah. The elephant in the room would be an amazing gimmick for a wrestler right now. I think maybe like change Sammy Guevara's gimmick to the elephant in the room would be a really good one.
Sure.
It's funny because like we had talked earlier about maybe doing an episode, this episode, where our word of the day would be a loser leaves town match. Mm-hmm. And then that, the Andrade loser leaves town match got canceled for tonight, which is just another in a string of bad luck or maybe bad force moments that AEW has. We're going to get into all of that today. But before that, we wanted to take a little bit of time, at least, to talk about the passing of Antonio Inoki, who was a wrestling legend, a legendary promoter and politician.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't even actually aware of that.
Yeah, like was a politician for quite a while too. So Kanji Antonio Inoki died on October 1st at the age of 79. From a word I'm about to say that I'm sure I'm not going to pronounce correctly. He died from amyloidosis. I feel like I got close enough, right?
I think that's close enough.
Yeah. So this is someone who I feel like most American fans, even really, really well-read American fans like us, tend to know the name Antonio Inoki and his face and his very legendary Bruce Campbell-like chin.
Yep, his iconic chin. The crimson chin.
The crimson chin. And we understand that he is someone who's very important, but maybe we didn't understand so much why he's important. So let's talk about it now. Like, what is his legacy? Why is he such a important figure in pro wrestling, Tyler?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. He's definitely a name that most people know. If you are a wrestling fan, like not even, you know, someone who's as dedicated as we are, but a casual wrestling fan, you've probably heard his name in passing, something along the lines of that. But yeah, he's a massive deal, not only to the Japanese wrestling scene, but to professional wrestling in general, sports entertainment, if you would. So Antonio Inoki, most, I think, you know, if you're taking like his biggest accolades, things people might know him the most for, number one, that I think that covers the most, you know, entertainment aspects is the crossover fight that he had with Muhammad Ali back in the 60s or 70s. So that's a massive one. And then, of course, he is the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes, he is. Yeah, the founder. We both read a wonderful piece that The Ringer did this week about the passing and life of Antonio Inoki. I think we both learned a lot. And I think, same as you, Tyler, like the thing that I always knew was like, okay, this is the guy who created New Japan. And I didn't realize how much of the iconography and the persona as a company is wrapped up in being Inoki as well.
Yeah.
Like I had
the
no
Lion, the King of Sports.
I had no idea that the Lion and then the term Young Lion came from Antonio Inoki being nicknamed the Lion, and that is why New Japan's logo is of the Lion. And you know, I think you know, someone can create a company and leave it and their influence can be gone. And I think what's really fascinating about Antonio Inoki is that his influence is still there, because not only did he create the company, but he created the style of wrestling that it's popular for. He basically created strong style, King's Road style of trying to do professional wrestling maneuvers that looked so snug and realistic that you could argue that pro wrestlers were the best combat fighters, regardless of the fact that their matches are predetermined. And that is really like, and like the article says this too, that like trying to argue Antonio Inoki's life goal as trying to prove that wrestling is the king of sports. And I think he did that for better or for worse throughout his career. And there's a lot of missteps in there. It's like, maybe we should talk about the Muhammad Ali fight for people who haven't like seen that before.
So the Muhammad Ali fight, this was Antonio Inoki had started New Japan at this point, and he was trying to find ways to not only promote the company, but, you know, promote this entire new style of wrestling that he was essentially bringing out, strong style. And what better way to do that than to have a sports entertainment crossover promotional event against arguably the most, you know, famous, well-known combat athlete ever, I would say, potentially.
Even at that time, too, because this was 76, even at that time, I feel like Ali's probably the most famous athlete, period.
Oh, yeah,
at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that shit in the 70s, that was, you know, around Ali's prime. I mean, he would easily be the most well-known boxer in the world, if not the most well-known athlete. But yeah, so that fight happens, and again, like I didn't know as much about it before reading that Ringer article, which is very informative. We definitely recommend it.
Yeah, but we'll link it. We'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember obviously clips of the fight. Like they talk a lot about how Inoki spent most of the 15 rounds on his back, like kicking at Ali's feet. And so, of course, I've seen that clip and just, you know, mostly people being like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I never knew that basically the rules had been determined beforehand that Ali was, I think, afraid of getting getting destroyed. And oh, yeah. Was like, no tackling, no takedowns, no grappling, none of the things that now are like the commonplace MMA techniques. Yeah. It was just like, you can kick me from your back. that was what was allowed.
Which is wild, because I mean, like, I guess, you know, Inoki would have to agree to what Ali wants, because Ali is clearly the bigger name who's going to help out Inoki in New Japan. But at that point, I mean, like, you should have just agreed to a boxing match. I mean, like, you can't do anything of what you want to do with Strong Style, essentially.
Yeah, it's like, but it's important that Inoki didn't want to just have a boxing exhibition.
Yeah.
Because, like, the legacy of this fight, which is not a very, like, good fight to watch, because it is just a guy in his back trying to kick Muhammad Ali for 15 rounds. But it is, like, it is, and it was attempted to be the, like, first MMA fight ever. And I think a lot of people do credit it as trying to like be having foresight of what MMA could be. And I mean, it's certainly a lot of the success of the UFC is attributed to efforts that Inoki tried to create his entire career. I mean, a lot of really good Japanese professional wrestlers probably have years taken off their lives because of Inoki's desire to continually book them in Pride and in other legit fighting promotions. I like reading how many fights that Shinsuke Nakamura had in MMA was terrifying to me a little bit. To think of, like, of putting all of these people who may have be practitioners in an exhibition style in all of these disciplines, but have been worked fights for most of their life, to put them against, like, real people is terrifying. But Inoki, to his credit, was really like, no, I believe wrestlers are the king of sports, and we're gonna have these fights, and I don't care if we lose 90 of them. If we win five, I'm gonna point to those five. And that, I mean, that really was his downfall, too.
Just with the Muhammad Ali fight, I mean, again, the backlash of him spending 15 rounds on his back kicking at his legs, I mean, both American fans as well as Japanese fans, I mean, they were livid. They were not happy about it.
Yeah. But it does, I mean, it also eventually leads to his ousting from New Japan because of his insistence on bringing in MMA stars to be professional wrestlers. And sometimes that worked out. Like, people like Josh Barnett worked out, but there's also, like, for every one of those, there's a Bob Sapp or a Don Fry and, like, people who he really wanted to move pro wrestling into an incredibly, like, ultra shoot style. And he left New Japan because of that, or he was asked to leave New Japan, depending on who you ask, and started the Inoki Genome Foundation, which I remember mostly from their crossover with TNA for a number of years. Do you remember this? When they would have shows together?
I'm not in the back of my mind right now, and that might be a good thing.
Yeah, they had some crossover events because for the short time that IGF was around, Antonio Inoki brought the IWGP title with him. And it was on Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar did not want to give it back to New Japan. So
that checks out.
Kurt Angle came over from TNA to beat Brock to then get the title back to New Japan. This is a real thing that happened. And it's like a little blip in history.
I remember hearing that about Brock Lesnar basically refusing to drop that title to anyone but Kurt Angle, essentially.
Yeah. It wasn't a good time to be Brock Lesnar at that moment. And then the other thing about Inoki that we should mention about his life, too, is that the role as a politician and diplomat that he had, which was also something we didn't know much about. What was your... Here's an amazing question for you, Tyler, to answer. Which of the many instances where Inoki got dictators to release hostages was your favorite.
that's a wild statement. But I mean, yeah, I mean, reading about that, like he negotiated with Saddam Hussein,
yeah,
the release of about 35 Japanese hostages, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. That's crazy.
We have him to thank for the collision in Korea pay-per-view,
yes,
which we've talked,
yes,
about.
So that's another thing. Obviously I knew about the collision in Korea. I knew that like Ric Flair had a match there in front of 200,000-300,000 people, easily, yeah, the largest wrestling audience in the history of ever. But I did not know that it was Inoki who basically brought that to fruition.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he could really go, you know, I don't know what this says about pro wrestling as an art form, but for whatever reason in the 80s and 90s, dictators in the world really liked pro wrestling.
Also today.
Yeah. That's true. So he really,
wrestling is universal, my man.
He really knew how to tap into that and to kind of do a smoke and mirrors type thing of like, I'm going to bring a big show to your, yeah, country, and out of the kindness of my heart, and while I'm here, why don't you release some citizens that you don't care about?
If you could give me a few hostages, that would,
yeah,
be cool.
I'm not going to take all of them, but
just a few.
I just want a few. So, Antonio Inoki, an amazing life lived. It's like, I'm trying to wrap a bow on him is really, mm-hmm, hard. But to think of, for an American fan, to picture someone who is a promoter who was as important and as visionary as Vince McMahon, who also, yeah, was a world-class in-ring wrestler,
right,
before,
yeah,
that.
That's the only distinction I would make. I was about to say, like, Inoki is to Japanese wrestling what Vince McMahon has been to American wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, completely changed the industry, created what is now and still the largest company in their country of professional wrestling. Like, but he is also a great performer.
Yeah. And also, like, I guess he's like to Japanese wrestling what, this is a bad analogy already. What, like, he's also like what Jesse Ventura is to American wrestling of like, oh, that wrestler became a politician.
Oh, yeah.
But like, but yeah, I think so. Inoki did a lot more, it seems, than Jesse Ventura did.
Yeah, than Jesse,
yeah,
Ventura.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back at some point now and watch some Inoki matches because I feel like I've only seen the MMA exhibitions from him, honestly.
Yeah, well, like, again, I don't think I've ever actually watched a full match of his, but I've absolutely seen clips. I saw the Muhammad Ali clip, the clip with, what's that dude's name? That big farmer-looking guy who Inoki just shoot on and just beat the crap out of him.
Is this Don Fry again, or is it, I was like, hey,
no,
Sax Callahan?
They mentioned it in the article. I don't remember his
Hacksaw
name.
Jim Duggan.
Kind of looks like Hacksaw a little bit. There's this match that Inoki had with this guy, and the guy just refused to sell like any of Inoki's offense, and Inoki being like a legit grappler fighter gets annoyed with him at some point and just like takes the dude out at the knee and then just beats the crap out of him.
That's amazing. I do really want to watch, you know, young Inoki is a student of Ricky Dozen, who was, mm-hmm, the first big Japanese star, and he was a longtime rival of Giant Baba. I feel like I want to go back and watch one of these Giant Baba Inoki matches, because that's another,
yeah,
big name that I haven't seen a match from. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely going to go back and watch this Big Van Vader versus Inoki match that I think is going to be bonkers. So we also encourage everyone else to check out Inoki, or at the very least read this article, because it was a really thorough and interesting look into a modern Renaissance man in and outside of the world of professional wrestling.
Yes. That one that I was talking about, funnily enough, it's Antonio Inoki versus the great Antonio.
Oh, the great Antonio. Yes. Yes.
Yes. and
beat him so bad he took his name.
he just beat the crap out of that big boy.
Yeah. All right. So the rest of our episode, basically, we are going to kind of free associate and dissect
going on in AEW.
Yeah. So they celebrated their third anniversary show this mm-hmm. past Wednesday on Dynamite. And even with a new and finally undisputed AEW World Champion and Jon Moxley, and with big shows with big gates like Grand Slam yep. recently, mm-hmm. Which I was at,
we're gonna need a personal rendition of that yourself. I gotta know everything.
Yeah, I'll give you some updates from that within this. I say it doesn't feel like there's much to celebrate in the company at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna do a state of AW sort of state of the podcast talk, mm-hmm. because I will start with by saying that like this was affecting me on a personal level, which sounds kind of like stupid to say, but I was already having a tough time personally the past few weeks of this summer, and wrestling, which is a respite for me, only kind of made me feel more anxiety.
Yeah,
because of the amount of backstage conflict and bad luck and uncertainty, that it made it really tough for me to enjoy. And I would say that I still felt that even at Grand Slam with like people that I liked being with there and like having a good time, that like it certainly was. It felt very different than Grand Slam last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a thing that I know that that Tony Khan tweeted out and was very like proud of like this year's Grand Slam being their first $1 million gate in ticket sales.
So that seems wild to me. I feel like surely they have had a bigger one, but
well, the tickets must have just been more expensive, honestly, because there were, I mean, I didn't count every person, but there were less people there this year than there were last year.
Okay.
So maybe they've raised ticket prices to try to make some more revenue, but it did make the building feel, it was less electric. And part of that is, you know, last year's show got to start with newly acquired Bryan Danielson facing off against Kenny Omega, who he's never fought, you know, like that.
Right. That's
like, that's
literally a dream match.
That's an impossible thing to top. But I guess we could start with Grand Slam right now if you want. Like, it certainly felt in the room like going with Moxley over Danielson was a bad idea as champion.
Sure. It felt like
how did it feel at home watching?
I mean, agreed. Like, I can only base it upon, you know, what I was feeling in the moment. And I mean, I wanted that belt on Danielson. I thought it was time. I thought it needed to happen. But to be fair, I also wanted that belt on the Acclaimed. So
yeah.
It feels like there were a few missteps, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you one really big misstep.
Yeah.
Being in the room there. I don't know exactly how this came off on TV, so I would love your take on this.
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't know at home how many times the television cameras cut to MJF watching the main event.
Okay.
But in the stadium, they showed us, and like on the big screens, they would cut to MJF maybe like once a minute for the entire match. So
yeah, it was definitely not that frequent at home.
It was a lot while we were there, and I think it really took the crowd out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is you know, we're finally going to have a settled AEW champion who's going to be here for a while, and we're you know, like, we're starting clean, and it's these two big stars, and they're wrestling, and they're friends, and they're wrestling again, and it could be a new champion, and to it took what should be like a serious moment in a company that can get very, very serious and reduced it to like us like watching MJF in his seats the whole time to wait to see what other funny thing he was going to do.
I would also guess, I mean, being there live and them doing that with that frequency, it's almost giving you kind of the red herring of like, so MJF's definitely cashing in after this match, right? Like, why else would you keep doing this?
Yeah, people definitely felt that. So it felt like a Chekhov's gun didn't go off.
New York, that's essentially his home turf. I mean,
yeah. We talked, friend of the podcast, Pat Stango, and I talked about this at the event on our way going in. We were like, do you think he's going to cash in? And we were like, well, we don't know. And we didn't know at that point whether the AEW chip could be cashed
could
in.
Could function
that
like
way.
The money in the bank. Exactly.
And we agreed on the way in. We were like, well, no, you can cash in a briefcase. Who's ever heard of cashing in a poker chip? So that was our... That was our backwards logic, but I'm happy to know that.
You're right, though, because like they had no point did they establish that, and then just I think randomly at some point Excalibur has confirmed that on commentary, like, oh nope, you totally can, like, oh well, great.
I hope that they don't, though. I think I'm kind of over that as a storytelling contrivance. I think it only works with a heel, and I feel like I feel like Tony Khan and AEW have tried so hard to make the world title feel really legitimate. And I feel like when people have their first world title reign because in a match that takes like a minute, it is a bad look, is my opinion.
It depends. Yeah. I mean, if you know, just on that stipulation, it's clearly a heel move. But I think the idea of being able to cash it in for a title shot whenever you want isn't necessarily a heel aspect, because I mean we've seen that work to a face's advantage, like when RVD cashed in and he told you exactly, this is the day I'm doing it right here. Most recently we saw Big E do it when he won his title. He's like, I'm cashing in tonight, I'm telling you right now. So it could be used, I think, in that way. But I do absolutely agree that it somewhat takes away the accomplishment of winning it, especially for a heel who might do it, you know, in a minute match or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. There's been a number of things. I mean, I guess I was going to move on to something else, but if you have other Grand Slam questions for me.
So, again, I really wanted the Acclaim to win those belts at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Did it feel lackluster for them to win it, Grand Slam? Because I mean, it's almost like you knew, like it was guaranteed that they were getting those belts.
And people were nervous about it in the room.
Really?
Because
was there the idea that maybe they wouldn't get the belts?
Yeah.
And wow, that's crazy.
I think people knew going in, like, well, surely they should win. And then once you're in there, they definitely got us a few times. And like that was definitely the. I will say that was the most into a match from beginning to end that the crowd was live.
Oh yeah, the match was still hot. It was great. I think you know, just it took a little bit away from me of just having watched their match at All Out and then knowing like they should have gotten the belts then, and then this immediate rematch that Tony is calling for is kind of obvious what's going to happen.
Yeah. But
either way.
Yeah, I mean the show that night needed that moment.
Yeah, yeah. To have you guys send you guys home without Bryan Danielson as the champion.
Well, I mean, we had a whole another like 2.5 hours of wrestling after that.
Oh, that's
happened
right.
Because Rampage was taped that night too. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the Acclaimed had the second biggest pop of the night. I think Saraya had the biggest pop.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, people went nuts for that, and I think it was a truly nothing had leaked, no one thought happening sort of
full
thing.
Surprise.
Yeah. So people were really into that. But yeah, those are kind of the two big highlights from that night for me. It was, I don't know that it's like, it certainly wasn't as ephemeral and memorable as last year's.
As the
it
first
certainly
one, sure.
It wasn't a bad show at all. It was like mm-hmm. a great show, but
how are you going to compare with Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson yeah. as your opener? Yeah.
I will say the merch was fantastic this year. And,
oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I got a really good shirt that I'm very happy with.
Excellent.
Now from Grand Slam, and I took all my effort not to buy a Oh Scissor Me Daddy shirt.
number one selling shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly was.
That's great.
Okay, so there's been a bunch.
I do just the quickest of sidebars.
Yes, yeah.
That shirt, the Scissor Me Daddy shirt. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Sarah about this. How I love the idea of that shirt, but it is such. It falls into that age old category of wrestling shirts that outside of a wrestling context. You can't wear it.
Yeah, and that was like, my argument to myself too. Was
it's
like
the
I can't go
Club
to the grocery
shirt.
Store in
yeah.
this.
It's
yeah.
the Bullet Club shirt. Like Bullet Club shirts, arguably like one of the most iconic, best designed wrestling shirts ever. Mm-hmm. If you wear that anywhere that's not a wrestling show, like people are gonna have questions for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I've worn my Bullet Club shirt around town a few times, and I think some people maybe just assume that I'm like a. You know, like a alpha male men's rights activist, like
sure,
gun nut.
Yeah, they assume you're a Andrew Tate fan. But.
Yeah, exactly.
But anywho,
there's been a number of things that have happened in AEW in the past few months that have been unfortunate mm-hmm. for them. We're gonna let's try to list them right now.
Okay.
The biggest one that I think we should talk about. At least for a bit, I know it's been talked to death at this point, mm-hmm. but is the CM Punk press conference and then backstage fight with yep. the Bucks and Kenny Omega. Mm-hmm. How do we summarize this in like 20 seconds? what are the facts? What do we absolutely know happened?
We absolutely know because we saw it happen on, yeah. on screen. Phil Brooks had a hissy fit.
Tyler coming in hot here.
I'm coming in real hot. Phil Brooks had a hissy fit, and yeah. and this is actually a great point. I saw some reporters like bringing this up. That is an important thing to I think acknowledge. During that whole medium scrum, at no point was he really like questioned or egged on by the interviewers to yeah. start his rambling. Yeah. Like he took it fully upon himself to be like, this is what I want to talk about right now. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
yeah.
We know that all of them are currently suspended and are still, as the pending investigation goes, I think apparently the investigation is complete, mm-hmm. But they haven't obviously announced anything yet. I've heard speculation from the end of Punk has been pseudo released. Tony Khan has bought out his contract for him to sit at home for 2 years.
I hadn't heard that yet.
I heard that one, but I mean, that's you know, it, like
that's
word of
not
mouth
a fact.
Stuff.
That's,
nothing reputable. Yeah. And then I also heard that, you know, Punk is still threatening to sue or something like
I'd
that.
I'd heard so. That today, that Punk is threatening legal action. We know for sure that there was a physical fight mm-hmm. that CM Punk, Matt and Nick Jackson, Kenny Omega, Ace Steel, and Christopher Daniels and Pat Buck were yep. involved in. We know
also
for
Larry
sure
was involved in.
Also Larry. We know for sure that Ace Steel bit Kenny Omega. Because he appeared on...
It's so upsetting that that is a we
confirmed
know this
fact.
Happened.
And it's maybe not 100% confirmed, but it seems pretty much in all accounts that CM Punk threw the first punch.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems confirmed that an AEW legal representative was physically there for this entire thing.
Yes.
And that is why it is being handled maybe... the like intensely corporate way that it's mm-hmm. being handled.
Exactly.
So that's the first and biggest worst thing that happened to to AEW, but not the last. I mean, at that same time, you had the AEW Women's Champion Thunder Rosa on the shelf with a back injury.
Injured, and vacated the title.
Yeah. And it's like a thing too that because of the social media and reporting shitstorm that happened with CM Punk, I think there was a lot of speculation that maybe her back wasn't actually hurt and maybe there was backstage issues with Thunder Rosa too, but I feel like those have all kind of been squashed and she's like, no, like I had surgery.
Right.
I don't know what to tell you. My back is hurt. We had at that same time Sammy Guevara on camera go off script to call Eddie Kingston a fat piece of shit, and then Eddie Kingston pie-faced Sammy. Sort of
scuffle backstage, yeah. Didn't they? And then Eddie was suspended.
Sammy was not. There's a theme here.
Right?
And then this week, Andrade El Idolo, who is someone who was rumored to have maybe asked for his release, was unprompted in an interview, was like, I had only one problem with someone backstage, and it's Sammy Guevara. Because he came up and said, don't hit me as hard.
Right.
And then Sammy, being the very young, yet too mature human being that he is, and I feel okay saying that as someone who hasn't met him based on the way that he presents himself online, decided to create a flame war on Twitter, went back and forth, and then at the show this week, Andrade punched him, and Andrade got sent home, and AEW Dynamite's third anniversary special ended with Sammy Guevara on TV looking like the hero, which is an amazing decision.
What is going on?
You also had the very poorly handled situation with Malakai Black, where he has also been having back issues, and there were a lot of wide-ranging reports about, like, he has asked for a release, or he has been granted a release, or he hasn't. He's having mental health issue. There was a lot of just, like, very serious accusations being thrown, to the point that this guy, who was notoriously kind of close-knit about his personal life, had to be like, I need to get on video and say, like, I'm not. Yeah. I'm still with AEW. I'm just taking some time. I wish you guys would stop talking about it. So we'll stop talking about it right now. But that is another bad thing that has happened to them. They've also just been, like, injury prone. Like, people have been dropping like flies left and right.
Which, I mean, that has been something they've been dealing with all summer, honestly. Even before All Out, before this, the Punk debacle, that, like, they've been dealing with this all summer of a lot of injuries happening, which, I mean, that's the nature of the business, but there are times where things start to happen in such frequency where you're like, what is going on? Like,
they feel snake bit. And it feels like this place that for so long was shiny and new and the most fun collaborative place to work very suddenly is none of those things. Right. Yeah. So here's a question that's not on the run sheet that I'll pose to you, Tyler. Mm-hmm. Had things, like, some of these things are bad luck. Some of these things were things that I think that tensions were bound to explode.
Yeah.
If Tony Khan had got the summer of AEW that he wanted and envisioned, what do you think it would have looked like?
Shoot. Let's see. I mean, if we go back far enough, Punk would have been champion from the start.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have, you know, injured his foot at Full Gear?
No. Yeah. Which one did he win the title initially from?
It might have been Full Gear. Because Revolution's is in like February.
I thought it was Revolution then.
Is that when he hurt his foot?
Because Full Gear's in the fall.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yep. Yeah. So it was that long ago.
It was Revolution, then he won it back at All Out.
Yeah. If he had not gotten injured then, like, he would have kept the title. In theory, you probably still could have brought MJF back at All Out, keep that timeline. Nothing's wrong with that. But also, I mean, you know, Thunder Rosa might not have gotten injured, which means you could have put the title on Toni Storm in a more definitive way, or someone else if you wanted to. Brian Danielson might not have gotten injured for that brief spell that he was.
That's right. I forgot that he was also, like, they were missing their, like, top
they
12,
were missing, like,
12
people
for,
yeah.
For a few weeks there. Yeah.
It's there was a whole lot of, you know, like what it's wild to think of, like what the original plan was compared to what it is now. And again, like we said, a lot of these things are out of their control. Injuries will happen and they're going to happen, and you just have to be able to call an audible for them. But I think it's specifically, you know, for us, and I think a lot of this adds to a lot of the feeling of like being upset with wrestling and not very interested in watching it, and just it's a task to watch it, is the decisions that they do have control over that are crap.
Then what is the most troubling issue that AEW needs to address first and right now to right its ship?
This is, look, I don't know anything about running a wrestling company, so I can't say this is the correct answer, and I may be talking out my ass a little bit, but it seems to me Tony Khan needs to get control of his locker room.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he does that. I don't know what's the answer. I don't know what's the best way, but it seems slightly to the extent that the inmates are running the asylum, to use that metaphor. So I don't know. It seems, you know, like you had said, the AEW since its start has always seemed like the shiny new thing that has a great place to work. People are leaving WWE because they don't have the creative freedom that they want. They come to AEW to be able to pursue that creativity. And it feels like all of that is gone now.
Yeah.
It seems very much like there are people there who are just making it an extremely toxic work environment. A lot of people are unhappy with what they're doing, and they don't have a direction. It seems it's wild. It's wild that this is coming up now, but it seems like it's mirroring a lot of the same complaints that people had of WWE not 2-3 years ago.
Yeah. And part of it is like that AEW's roster has ballooned.
That's true. It is an extremely bloated
roster. And maybe Tony Khan really bet on having a third show by this point, at having a Ring of Honor show. And I think that the Discovery Time Warner merger has kind of slowed that down. Mm-hmm. So that's not, you know, that's out of his control, but now he's got so many toys and he doesn't have a big enough toy box to put them in. And it's funny, like, I think he's publicly been very loud about, like, WWE has tried to reach out to people that they had released before who are now under AEW contract, and he doesn't like that, so he's been like, I'm not granting releases to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I actually think he should. Like, I think it's the point where it's like, if someone doesn't want to be there, let him go.
I 100% agree. Yeah. Because I was thinking this the same thing. Because you know what else that is mirroring? It's mirroring WWE's mindset not 2 years, 3 years ago of, we have all these people, we're going to keep them purely so you don't go to the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not exactly the same, but like it comes across that way whether you want it to or not. Like the fact that AEW has such a bloated roster, and if that is the case that Tony's like, you know, I'm not letting these people go because they're going to go to the competition. That's literally what WWE did, and it's just it's a poor mindset that is going to come across negatively to your fans, whether it's the truth or not.
Here's what I'd say too, is that some of the people, and again, like you and I are not in that company, and we're not back there seeing what people are, but the people that who perceive to maybe not want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
How many of these people do you think WWE would actually want to do stuff with? CM Punk is the biggest, and like I don't think that they would do anything with him.
I think it's decided they WWE has no interest in CM Punk.
Yeah, it's more that like they don't understand. Tony doesn't want to release him because it's a lot of money to eat.
Right. To buy,
it makes more sense to let him just waste away for 2 years.
Sure. I'm confident that WWE has zero interest in him.
Yeah. But I suppose Andrade is someone who they may want to use, but I guess like
it's potential.
Depends on how big of a part of their plan Charlotte is, who's still MIA.
I was gonna say Andrade's potential, because like we have seen Andrade utilized in a very good way when he was on NXT when Triple H was in charge, and now that Triple H is in charge on the main roster, there's nothing to say that he won't be used well if he were to go back. I absolutely see their interest in a Malakai Black. He was treated extremely well in NXT, and I'm confident that Triple H would love to have him on the main roster and kind of, you know, get another shot at him, just like he's doing with Karrion Kross right
Karrion
now.
Karrion Kross, yeah.
So
yeah. So those are, that's one. Those are two. I think FTR, they would, the same thing. They would want to do.
See, that's wild to me. I don't know for sure, but it seems wild to me that FTR would be wanting to leave or anything.
Yeah, like
they're treated extremely well.
They haven't been on TV a lot recently, but they've been doing a lot. I think that they are in big time plans. I think maybe they're lumped into this just by being CM Punk's boys, or perceived to be that way.
Yeah,
backstage. Yeah. Sammy Guevara. Here's like the point I want to make. Here's a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I think Sammy Guevara wants to be there. I think my perception is that maybe the older people there don't want him to be there.
Don't want him there.
That he is like a guy who talks about how much he hates drama. It's certainly the person who's like if Sammy Guevara were to get released tomorrow, I don't believe AEW would sign him. I don't believe WWE would have any interest in him. He's a young guy, and he's really athletic, but he would look so small in a WWE ring.
Yeah.
And I see like WWE as so corporate that they are able to see these red flags on guys that maybe they didn't have before, you know.
That's potential. I mean, again, Sammy's absolutely a guy who could excel in an Impact or something like that, but
yeah.
I'm
I mean, sure they already have Austin Theory, so like I don't
who's and Austin Theory's a bigger than Sammy him Guevara.
Here's the thing, like, who's someone who's like featured prominently on WWE who is perceived as like small there? So like Theory is 6'1", 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Sammy Guevara is 5'10", 190.
Jeez, yeah.
Like Sammy Guevara, they play very similar characters, and he would look so much like a dwarf next to Austin Theory.
Yeah.
That I just don't see what the value is of Guevara in WWE. So that's like one that's like, if I could sit down Sammy beyond telling him just to like stop tweeting, I would be like, you cannot do anything to risk your job here. Because this is the place that's going to value you the most. well, I'm trying to think of other things that need to be changed up immediately. Beyond, like tightening the roster.
I think that's the biggest one.
Tony, like, pulling out the big stick and showing that he's in charge. Making some heads roll symbolically.
Something. And again, like, I don't know the correct answer to that, but like, he needs to do something to get that same effect. And yeah, I don't know.
I know that a big thing that WWE did this week was hire someone who was a former writer for them that people really, really like. And they gave him the position of director of long-term creative.
Oh.
I think that the thing that has been the best part of AEW at its best has been long-term storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think maybe mostly because of these injuries and like how many times have titles had to restart in the past few months?
Geez, yeah.
That there's no coherence to the show right now. And I think it is really simple that like if he feels like he has people back, that Tony Khan, there's that old sports thing that's like winning fixes everything, that you can have all these issues that people talk about in the media, but if you win, no one cares. Yeah. And I think that like to AEW, winning is like getting back into long-term storylines that people are invested in. So they gotta, maybe they've already started some, that we're going to be super into for the next 6 months, but like, like getting back to the basics of what makes their show different and interesting is what I think they have to do first and foremost.
Yeah, I do agree. Like, that's a good point of like, one of the best things that AEW always had going for it was these great long-term stories that they were telling. And when they came to fruition, it felt worth it. It felt like they were acknowledging, you know, the fans who were sticking with these long stories, and the payoffs were worth it and they mattered. And like we had said, you know, injuries can obviously throw a wrench in those plans and they're completely out of your control. But I think if anything, this past year has really shown that AEW really isn't the best at improvising and finding ways to alter those long-term stories, but in a meaningful way, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I think it's also like there needs to be some delegation from Tony. Like, he's running three businesses at once, four businesses, I guess, with Ring of Honor as a separate entity. Yeah. And it's like, you gotta, I guess, like, part of this has started with having Tony Schiavone be in talent relations. Like, they need to have some more talent relations people. Yeah. They need to have people who everyone in the company feels good about in charge of keeping the peace, basically. I think.
They all respect, they'll listen to, like.
Make Sting head of talent relations.
I was just thinking Sting.
Yeah, make it a board of people. Have a number of people you can go to rather than going to Twitter to air your grievances.
Yeah, he could sit him down, have a come to Jesus meeting.
Like. Yeah, he certainly would. Do you think that leaks have become an issue, or do you think they are still a positive for AEW?
They've become an issue because the validity of them is uncertain, and that's where the problem, I think, is these rumors that for all we know could be complete bullshit, but because it's been an ongoing trend of this last year, like, you can say anything about AEW now and people are inclined to believe it potentially.
Yeah,
so these leaks of, you know, oh, this person's unhappy, this person asked for the release, this person's got beef with this person, it's contributing to this entire overarching feel of toxicity in the company and everything that, again, might be bullshit.
Yeah,
but we don't know.
I think a big issue is that, like, a much bigger percentage of AEW's fans than WWE's are people who read these dirt sheets.
Yeah.
So when they see something, we are now conditioned to expect AEW to write it into their storylines. And that's a problem because a lot of the stuff that has been gossiped and rumored about recently is so toxic that they should not address them on air, is my opinion. And I think that Tony has been trying to acknowledge them on air as little as possible, but then people feel confused by the storytelling and maybe the real first thing that went wrong was this MJF plane ticket thing.
Oh, really?
Earlier in the year, where, like, I remember being really mad because I felt like it, and I feel like I've been confirmed that was mostly a work,
right?
So now I can't trust that anything I'm being fed by these reporters is real.
Absolutely, because remember the 3 days between All Out and Dynamite, or maybe 2 days if it was, or I don't know, like, that amount of time was crazy because we had all heard about the media scrum, we all heard about the fight, but everyone was like, is this real? Is this a work? Like, what happened?
Yeah,
only to still, like, we know that it's real now, but we never got an answer, and that was the answer I guess we needed. But
so I think they need to kind of reset
there.
So maybe it's not the problem that there's leaks, but they need to make it clear to their viewership that, like, just because something is going on backstage does not mean that it will be part of our our presentation. Get us used to that. Have you seen the reports that Meltzer did about ticket sales for AEW recently?
Not, no.
So they are at their softest that they've been in a while. He was talking about their next like 8 or 9 shows that are mostly in the Northeast again. It is a really simple fix, or at least in my head, it's a really simple fix. It's probably a logistical nightmare, but I think that AEW would really benefit from exploring more first-time towns and venues to explore in this next year. I love that I get to see Grand Slam every year. They're also in Jersey a lot. They're in Chicago all the time.
All the time.
But like, I can feel the fatigue of like the same people have now gone to the show.
Well, it's I mean, you're oversaturating your market too. I mean, these same fans can't afford to go to 4 shows a year. Like, you got to spread it out.
I would say it's even bad if they can afford to, but because they go so often, and because I know they're coming back again, I can set this one out.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about like NXT Brooklyn until like that was not a permanent thing, and now I'm like, oh, I missed that. But they're like I certainly have felt less energy in the arenas the more AEW shows I've gone to. And maybe by going to a place that hasn't had an AEW show yet, you continue to get that great first time energy and excitement and reaction, and that comes through on the television, you know. And that's a huge, huge thing. We're going to go through a few really quick confidence meter questions for you, Tyler.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to read you a statement, and you tell me how confident you are in the validity of that statement.
Oh, boy.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I'm not confident at all, 10 being like, yes, what you just told me is true.
Okay. It's damn true.
If I'm a WWE mid-carder or low-carder right now, I'd be looking to sign with AEW.
That's a 1.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'll give it like a 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Hard no. Now is not the time. Because again, like we have talked about on this podcast just now, is that their roster is extremely bloated. There's a lot of people who just got there who have nothing to do.
Yeah.
So if you are considering that now's the time, maybe wait a bit.
If I'm a rising star on the independent scene, I'd like to be signed by AEW.
Yeah, sure. That's always a thing. That's probably an 8 or a 9.
Yeah.
I mean, even again, despite a bloated roster or something, being on AEW television once a month is better than never being on it. So
yeah, and you can continue to work the indies with most AEW contracts, unlike a WWE one.
Yeah.
AEW is making the same mistakes that WCW made.
Oh man, like a 7 maybe.
Hmm.
It feels that way, right?
Yeah.
Like I know it's not exactly the same, but it feels that way.
Yeah, they're definitely, the MJF thing felt like, to me, I think people really ended up liking it, and I'm kind of on the outlier, but the MJF airplane thing to me seemed like bad Vince Russo booking, where because the line was blurred so much that it became uncomprehensible.
Right.
And I think that like the fact that they are on a Turner network, and that Turner is going through another corporate merger at the same time, like that's not a mistake. That's not AEW making it same mistake. That's just like a weird history repeating itself thing. Yeah, although like the merger seems much better for AEW right now, and like the value of their TV rating and like the value of having a live sporting event on TV is much greater now than it was for WCW then. So I don't actually think that's going to be a huge issue. Yeah, I think they're making some of the same mistakes.
It's some of the same mistakes. Enough to be like, it feels like that. I mean, obviously not exactly, but
late stage WCW had a lot of restarts, and there had been a lot of storyline restarts and title shuffling recently.
And we're here calling for a restart to AEW now. So.
Yeah, that's true. AEW will obtain representation on a streaming service in 2023.
Oh, man. See, this is all corporate gabagool that I don't know anything about. So I'm going to say a 6, maybe.
I think it's like a 2. I don't feel that confident.
I'm not sure what the plan is with this merger and like if they have a streaming service in mind or what, but
they need a hub. They need an online hub to put their backlog in. I think that will be.
I think they're getting, like, they have enough now with the acquisition of Ring of Honor to have a hub. Like, they have enough content now.
Yeah. And it's just putting it somewhere. And, you know, I feel like wrestling fans don't need it to be that beautiful or special of an app.
I guess the other question of that is, do you think, given that WWE has essentially scrapped their hub to have their stuff on Peacock, that AEW is like, then why would we have one? Like, if WWE isn't on,
I don't think they want like AEW Network. I think they want a hub under an exist, like on HBO Go.
On HBO or
The way that like, or like it will become Discovery Go. But like the way that like you can go to the Turner Classic Movies hub,
go to AEW
on HBO Go.
All Out from 2 years ago.
Even if it's not everything, even if it's just the pay-per-views and some of the best episodes of Dynamite right now, I think that would be valuable to have that highlight reel stuff replayable and discoverable for the people who know it's there and the people who don't know it's there.
That's fair.
Last one. CM Punk has wrestled his last AEW match.
Man. It's so wild because, like, I want to say 10. Like, I want to say absolutely.
It feels like 10.
But I honestly, like, I don't know, man. I'm going to say 8. It feels that way, but you can never say never.
If he's not.
I could see, like, he's clearly, he's made a fool of himself. And he's probably, you know, if anything,
does he
really
know that?
Well, no. If anything, he's probably really strained the relationship that he and Tony Khan have. But Tony Khan strikes me as enough of a wrestling fanboy that if Punk were to come to him with his hat in his hand and his tail between his legs, that Tony might be like, all right, well, we can work something out.
Yeah.
But then again, that's not something Phil Brooks would ever do.
Yeah. That's like the thing is that, like, in theory, the fact that Punk is legit injured right now and would be sitting at home anyway, time should heal wounds physically and metaphorically, should make people reflect and come back to the table and be like, why were we even fighting to begin with?
Yep.
Phil Brooks, time is certainly does not work that way with Phil Brooks, demonstrated on the grudges that he holds with people. So, which is too bad, because like I would love a world where he comes back and the Young Bucks turn on Kenny Omega and we have a Young Bucks and CM Punk trio. I think that is the most like appealing heel faction in AEW that you could possibly do.
Yeah. Agreed.
I want it so bad, but I just don't see a world where
you come here, Andrew, and you give me these incredible ideas that are probably never going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. There's like a 1% chance of that happening. I want to see Kenny Omega versus Ace Steel in a dog collar match.
In a dog collar match?
Yeah.
In a first blood match?
Yeah. So we've just crossed over the hour-long point. I said this was going to be a true hour-long episode.
We're
going to do one final thing here. And I think we need to end on a positive note.
Yes.
What are we most excited for the rest of the wrestling calendar year? AEW, WWE, whatever. Let's list a few things that we are excited to see happen.
I mean, we talked about it before we hit the record button. I'm excited for Survivor Series.
Yeah.
I think... Again,
War games.
War Games.
Yeah.
It's been the weirdest transition of watching with the exodus of Vince McMahon, the rise of WWE, and the
so
weird
fast too.
decline of AEW at the same time. Yeah. It's super weird.
But we kept talking on the show so often about like how WWE is such a big like cruise line ship that it's really hard to turn a big ship like that quickly. And Triple H has just been like, no, like fucking like steer that wheel all the way to starboard.
Well, maybe see, like, this is my thought. This is my thought of what's going on. I think that Triple H is handling the like the on-screen wrestling and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
the talent.
Yeah. And I think having that split where Vince McMahon was a crazy person who wanted to be involved and in charge of every decision that's made on every front, that WWE is too massive of a corporation, it's too big of an entity for one person to do that. And if Triple H is literally like, okay, I'm gonna take care of the wrestling, you do whatever, like, then you can focus on that. You can make better decisions.
Yeah.
It's a much smaller ship to turn.
Yeah, and like maybe there is big turning happening in the parts of the ship that maybe it's more like Columbus's three ships coming up for Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday.
Yeah.
But that it's like maybe Nick Khan and Stephanie are also turning their ships, but it's maybe not just as like apparent to a wide public.
Yeah.
It's funny that we're both so excited for Survivor Series when there is not an actual like match announced yet, just that there will be two War Games matches.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They have set it up to, there are stories going on that are interesting enough that whatever they decide for them, like, you kind of want to see.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
The entire Sami Zayn bloodline storyline is my favorite thing in wrestling right now. So like whatever they do with it, I'm going to be excited. I'm going to watch it.
Can I give you a prediction for that?
Hit me.
I think we're both pretty confident that one of the teams in the men's War Games match will be the Bloodline.
Yeah.
Right. It will be Roman, the Usos, Sika, and Sammy.
Yeah.
I think, we talk a lot about how, like, the Royal Rumble is the beginning of the road to WrestleMania, and that's where, like, WWE's long-term storytelling starts.
Mm-hmm.
I think whatever big storyline thing happens in that men's War Games match is going to be the beginning of the main event of WrestleMania.
Well, so I have one question for you.
Yeah.
And then we can wrap it up if you want.
Mm-hmm.
There's Andrew.
Yeah.
Mr. Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that Sammy dethrones Roman, right?
I think there is a like I think there's like an 87% chance that happens.
Are you serious?
I really think,
is Sammy the one to do it?
I really think so.
Oh, this would be the greatest thing in the world. Please.
And
Paul,
it's like,
Paul Levesque, I am pleading to you.
And I think you could start it there. And I think that it could be the kind of thing where it's like the main event of WrestleMania, assuming that The Rock isn't going to be there, would be Roman Reigns with the Bloodline around him versus Sammy with KO with him. And like, KO wouldn't have a match. He would just be in his corner, and you can do a really classic early WrestleMania, like, emotional storyline there.
That would be insane. Oh my God.
But I also think whoever is on that second team,
mm-hmm,
could be like Gunther is a possibility to fight Roman. This is me really assuming that The Rock can't get cleared.
Yeah. I mean, KO will definitely be on the team. And honestly, if not,
could
Sammy,
be Drew.
KO is a great option.
Yeah. There's a lot of people. I don't think Cody. I mean, the only, I guess, potential WrestleMania main event that can't happen at Survivor Series is Cody. Like,
it's Cody.
Like he's just not going to be.
Assuming he could be back for the Rumble, but.
Yeah. I think that's where, I mean, but I will also say, like, if I'm wrong about this and we get a WrestleMania match that is the Usos versus Sammy and KO, I'd be super happy for that too.
Yeah, that too is also good.
Yeah. What else are we excited for right now?
I mean, honestly, I am excited for a few AEW things. I'm excited that Saraya is there and whatever she plans to do. I heard that she got cleared recently.
Yeah.
So while I am excited, I am also a little hesitant about that. But, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully that goes over well.
It will go over better than I think people jump to like, ooh, like bad signing based on how right. bad the segment on Wednesday was. Mm-hmm. But I think like. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's one TV yeah. segment. Yeah.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited for whenever Kenny and the Bucks get to come back.
yeah. Yeah. Me too. The thing I'm most excited for in AEW right now, legitimately,
mm-hmm.
is AEW Fight Forever.
okay. Yeah. Do they have a release date yet?
They have a release year now. Well, yeah. they have like an official site now. It okay. says it is coming in 2022, so I think it is going to be a like Christmas. Wow. You can pre-order it now.
Okay. Okay.
Like it did really really well at the video game expos mm-hmm. that it went to. Mm-hmm. Won some awards, not even just in the game or in the like sports category. People were like, "Oh man, this is a great game."
Yeah.
I'm excited to have basically a No Mercy clone updated for
the... looks a little nicer. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks a little nicer, but not too nice. I'm excited that they added Pokemon Stadium style mini games to yep. it. I think I'm excited that I think this will be the wrestling game, the first one in like 20 years that people who are not wrestling fans might will actually play.
Enjoy
and be like, yeah, "Oh, that's super yeah. fun." Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm very excited for that.
I'm definitely going to get it. I've been looking forward to it for a while. Is Punk going to be on the roster?
Well, he's on the cover.
is he? Oh, no.
The cover has six athletes on it. It has Britt Baker. I'm going from left to like right. It okay. has like Britt Baker, Chris Jericho, Jade Cargill, Moxley, Omega, and then Punk like largest in the middle of them.
Okay. So, I like that Jade's on there.
Yeah, Jade's actually the tallest on there. She's like reigning supreme right. I over like everybody. Jade's on there. But yeah, I think that game is going to be the AEW that I want will always be in that game. I feel like so.
That's I'm the excited. Correct answer.
I'm excited to see what the direction of. I mean, I'm excited for them to get into Moxley versus MJF.
Yeah,
because like I think Moxley versus Hangman next week will be great, but I don't think anybody expects that to be a more than a week or two long thing.
Yeah,
yeah, and like Hangman's gonna get booed because they're in Cincinnati. It's gonna be weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for that. I'm kind of excited for Ring of Honor World Champion Chris Jericho. I'm excited to see them start doing
the Ocho
one-off deals with former Ring of Honor World Champions for matches.
I am for that. The only thing, if he beats Samoa Joe, I'm going to be upset.
He's going to. That's going
to
happen.
I know he's going to, but I'm going to be upset when it happens.
I mean, WWE released Nigel McGuinness today, so.
Oh, did they? What?
Yeah.
Can Nigel wrestle?
No.
Or is
I think okay. he is, like, so not cleared.
Okay. I was like, I don't think that man's cleared.
But maybe they could do something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting.
So there is stuff to look forward to. You'll probably hear us talk more about WWE than we have in the past few months. So we're sorry to all of those fans out there. We're paying more attention now. So I think that about does it for our triumphant return to talking about mm-hmm. wrestling. Tyler, got anything going on? You're going on tour?
Afraid not. No, I'm about to... eat some dinner and watch Rings of Power. Yeah. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, I was gonna make
a
joke
Middle
about
Earth, baby.
Yeah, yeah. And say you're on a tour of wedding venues, but I can cut that out if you want me to.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Great. Well, then in that case, we're gonna leave you as we always do with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Dig it.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't heard that in a while. That's good.
I haven't heard it in a while.
That's good.